Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood. You know, the real conversations.
Tips and tricks.
Products we love.
And brands we can't live without.
Let's get into it. So welcome to Friday's episode of the podcast. Both Georgia and I are so excited that you've kind of found us again and that you're listening to today's podcast, a really special one, actually. We wanted to open up today's Q&A to you guys to find out how you're feeling about everything that's going on in Ukraine at the moment and how to navigate having those conversations with our children. Obviously, our news is on all the time. Our children are asking questions around the war, around what's happening to the mothers, the babies. There's lots of conversations that George and I are finding quite difficult to navigate at the moment. So we thought, do you know what? We're going to get a current affairs expert in who's editor-in-chief at The Week Junior and also the sister magazine. I don't know how she does it, Science and Nature. She's been editor-in-chief there for, well, since 2015, since its launch. She knows exactly what she's talking about in this area. She's got two teenage children as well. I say children, they're 12 going on 25 now, I imagine. So yeah, we're really excited to welcome Anna Bassi to the podcast. Welcome!
Thanks, Anna. Well, I was just thinking, the last 7 years must have been absolutely crazy for you with so many things to navigate. How has it been?
It's been a roller coaster ride since the very beginning. I have to say, I've never had a job quite like it. The news never stops. There's always something new and different to learn. We've had a lot of, you know, big events and some quite difficult stories to contend with. In fact, our launch issue was in November 2015 and coincided with the terror attacks in Paris. So we had to make a decision right from the get-go around how we tell these stories to children who are, you know, as young as 8 years old, you know, and even if there are stories that perhaps we shouldn't be discussing with them. So it's been, we've had terror attacks, we had Brexit, of course we've had any number of general elections, we've had the pandemic, and now of course war in Ukraine is you know, it's just dreadful and it's impossible to avoid hearing about it. I mean, even the very youngest children, I think really from the time a child can read, you are going to be kind of navigating those difficult questions with them. So, you know, I hope that what we do is it makes that job a little bit easier for parents.
And it's interesting because it's even younger than, you know, reading age, because, you know, my son is sitting in the car and the radio's on and, you know, the news bulletin comes in and he's hearing about the hundreds of people that have lost their lives and he's asking, you know, why did that man die, Dad, Mummy? And I'm not sure what to say back to him, you know. I don't want to go, oh no, don't worry about it, you've misheard. I don't want to kind of make light of it, but I also, you know, he's 4 years old. It's really tricky to even know how to start to navigate that.
And also, just seeing the scenes on the TV as well, you know. Some, I mean, I try quite hard not to have the news on, especially in the morning when we're like in a rush and I maybe haven't got the time to take to, you know, to talk it through. Maybe in the afternoon and a bit later when things might be a bit calmer and easier to talk things through. But, you know, I think some of the visuals that they see, it can be really difficult to tell them that that's real life and it's not fiction that they're watching. And
it's really hard. I mean, I think a lot of parents are like you. A lot of parents will turn the radio down in the morning to avoid the, you know, to avoid exactly that. But, you know, the pictures are impossible to avoid. I was on my way into work on Monday morning and passing through Wimbledon Tube Station, and there are loads of school children going through, getting on the tube, and, you know, of course, there's sort of copies of the Metro all over the place, and the front page showed a tank in flames. And I actually felt really upset that that was what they were seeing as they were on their way to school.
Yeah.
And then when you start delving into it, I mean, our children here in this country at the moment seeing it on the telly and, you know, in magazines and on the front cover of newspapers. But imagine being a child, you know, in the actual conflict zone at the moment and what they're having to go through. And I think when my kids see kids on the telly and they look and they go, yeah, but mummy, they're that little girl, she seems like she's my age. And suddenly you're having to explain why those children are in the middle of it.
We'll
get into it. We had loads of questions sent in. We really wanted to open up this discussion. Before we do, I just wanted to ask, at what age should we be speaking to our children about world events that are sort of on that scale?
I mean, I don't think there's a set age for having those sort of conversations. I think, you know, you're the best judge of your child's emotional maturity. I mean, certainly from the moment that they start asking questions, you have to, you know, you have to listen to them. And as you said earlier, you can't brush it away and pretend it's not happening. I think if your child is asking questions, you've got to take those answers seriously and try and answer them as carefully as you can. But yeah, it's really, you know your child best. You know what they're what they're most capable of kind of handling. I think our, you know, the Week Juniors for children aged 8 to 14, and I think at aged 8, children, you know, clearly they're mostly going to be competent readers by that point. You know, they are at school, they'll be hearing things in the playground, so there's a limit to how much you can protect a child anyway from hearing about things. Even if you're very careful at home, they're going to hear something when they're in school from a friend, and, you know, that something might not be entirely factually correct. So I think you also have a job to do as a parent to try and to make sure that what they're hearing is not incorrect and isn't, you know, perhaps making things appear even worse than they already are.
Yeah, and sometimes I guess not having all the information or not feeling like the information that they've been given is the whole picture can cause more anxiety and worry, can't it, than just actually knowing that they can come to you and the information you're going to give them is the truth, and so they can rely on that rather than building like stories in their heads and taking it to, you know, taking it to new heights. But it is definitely a fine line. I mean, I've got a son, Axel, he's 5, but he's a real warrior. Like, that's the only way I can describe it. Like, he takes on a lot. I mean, we can't even watch like The Lion King without him getting really upset. It's like he's like a real empath, you know. He feels all of everyone else's emotions, and so I find it particularly hard to navigate with him. But I have found that being honest
It's
kind of the best way to go.
Yeah, just don't get into a conversation around love seed and women's wombs, because that's where I was going down a hole. And then Luna was like, "Where's the love seed?" And I was like, "Oh God, can we just go down and have our cornflakes now, please?"
That conversation is to make it so boring that they lose interest.
Good tactic. Make it really boring. Yes.
Okay, I'll try that tack when it comes up again. George, do you want to kick us off with the questions?
Yeah, let's kick us off. This is from Kerry. How to explain the Russian invasion to tween age?
Look, I think, as you said, sort of understanding the fact and knowing that the facts you have are right is really important. So the way we've approached this in the magazine is, I think having a little bit of knowledge of the history of the region is really important. The relationship between Russia and Ukraine, the formation of the Soviet Union, the collapse of the Soviet Union. So to understand where in the world this is happening and what the background to it is, the reason why they're invading. Well, I think another thing that we felt was very important to be clear about here is it's Russian troops that are invading, and that not all of Russia actually is behind this activity. So this is the decision of their president, and he doesn't want Ukraine. He doesn't believe Ukraine has a right to exist as an independent country.
Yes.
I think the main thing for children really is, you know, it's knowing where in the world it's happening, understanding the politics of the area very simply, and we have explained this very clearly within the magazine. Once we've done that, and it's simply about territory, once we've done that, we don't tend to dwell too much on how they're doing it and you know, what's really happening on the ground to people. You know, the sort of, we don't talk about weapons, we wouldn't talk about the violence. We do tell our readers that, of course, this means that some people have had to leave their homes, and many people are sheltering. And we will always very quickly move on to focusing on the people who are trying to help in the area. So this is what's happening. There is an invasion. People are scared. People are hiding. People are leaving. And there are lots of other people and countries who are trying to help them, to sort of try to bring the war to an end, and also to try and help them in their immediate circumstances.
That's brilliant. That's just such a clear and kind of defined way of doing it, because it doesn't emotionally, you know, you're not attaching emotion to it. You're just trying to give them the facts around the political situation in terms of land and the history behind it, and whether, you know, why he's doing it. I mean, who knows what's going on in that man's head? So I think you're right.
Yeah, I think we're sort of, we can't even begin to go there. And I think the other thing to say actually is that, you know, if you don't know the answer, it's genuinely okay to say that you don't know the answer. You don't know the answers to everything, and it is really complicated, but it is, you know, that you can see that your child is feeling sad and you feel sad as well. I think the most important thing of all, though, is to actually not, you know, because, you know, we're all feeling anxious about it, you know. Is the word war is a very scary word, and, you know, what we're seeing and hearing is awful, but I think we have a job to do as parents in trying to contain our own emotions, so that we don't share those with our children. I mean, saying that you're sad is one thing, but saying that you're scared or that you're anxious might not help them very much. I think we have to try and sort of protect them and make them feel safe, which is why our sort of our formula for reporting on these sort of events is always to then is to think about how you can help, you know, what people are doing to help, how we can help as well.
Yeah. And also, I guess, not, it's interesting you say not focusing on talking about the weapons and that kind of stuff, because that feels very scary to anybody, doesn't it? It's just good to be clear to know that it's kind of best to maybe just stay away from those discussions.
I think so. It's also, you said earlier about images, you know, you don't want to show images like that to children. I mean, again, they may not be able to avoid them if they're on the front pages of other newspapers, but we think very carefully about, you know, we'll show that people around the world are really upset about this by showing a picture of one of the huge protests that took place over the weekend. We'll show the people who are receiving refugees. We will always use maps to show where in the world this is happening. And I think that might be a really helpful thing to do with a child, as well as actually to look at a map together. You know, one, because it's important to know where in the world these things are happening, but two, I guess for children in the UK, it might be quite reassuring to see how far away this is as well from them, because I think for a lot of children the fear is this going to affect me, you know, how is this going to affect me and my mum and dad, but actually maybe that might help to make them feel a little bit more secure as well.
Actually, do you know what, that's really interesting, Anna, that you said that, because we've got a world map. Luna's got a world map on her wall next to her bed, and because we look, my mum lives in Kenya, so we always go, where's Shushu, and she shows me that Kenya's down here, and we were actually looking yesterday, and I was saying Russia's over here, China's over here, and she was looking at the distances, and she's only five, so she doesn't really know what's going on, but she's picking up on snippets of it, and it was actually, I could tell that she was suddenly working out, actually, no, that's not very close to where we live. And I think you know, that doesn't help us, because you can't just go, oh well, it's not happening on my doorstep, but for a child it was really good. It's interesting you say that. It's a big question, but how do you not feel low every time you see the news?
Oh gosh, well, I think we've spent the past 2 years hearing about COVID and, you know, the impact of the pandemic and now this, but I think, you know, we all have to remember that these aren't the only things that are happening in the world. They might be the biggest and, you know, the worst things that are happening in the world, but there are lots of other amazing things happening. You know, within the magazine, within the Week Junior, we're always very careful to balance, you know, reports about events like this with, you know, we've got in this week's issue, we have got 3 pages actually about what's happening in Ukraine. But we've also got a page on the world's oldest trousers. and we've got a page about how pine martens act as bouncers to protect squirrels in the wild. You know, and we've always got a page of ridiculous stories about people who put, you know, snail slime on their face, or a shark sticking out of a house somewhere in the north of England. You've got to have balance. You have to. It's so important, and it's not to trivialise. It doesn't trivialise the news, the important news. But I think for everybody's sanity, you have to remember there are good things and there are good people as well.
Yeah, and do you know what? I don't know if you agree with this, George. I don't know if you've been doing this in your house, but I have been having the news on for a short time so that I get, so let's say I get the kids to bed and then I watch the 7 o'clock news, and I'll just watch 15 minutes of it, take what I can from the day. If there's anything that I can do to help, if there's a drop-off location locally, or if I've got something together or something like that ready to go, and then I turn the news off. And then that's me done. I can't have it on. We were watching it the other night and it was on for like an hour and it was just repetitive. And I was just like, this is so upsetting. And I felt really, really anxious and my heart was racing. It wasn't good. For me, that's how I put it in a box.
And I guess it's like a really privileged position to be in, isn't it? That we can switch off and we can step away from it. And I think as long as we know that we're in a really privileged situation that, we can do that, we can protect ourselves, then I think that, you have to use the coping mechanisms that you use. Like, I'm exactly the same. Like, I mean, I can't even watch some films because I then take it on for the rest, for the rest of the week. So I know that if I sit watching the news all day, it's not going to be good. It's going to be terrible for me. Mm. Like you say, Zoe, I try and arm myself with the facts, the
information, exactly.
And the information. And I might have the odd discussion with, my husband or my mum or a friend occasionally about it, but I really try to not let it take over everything and take everything from me.
I think it's a good way of being,
because it would be easy, wouldn't it? It would be so easy to do that and let that happen.
Do you come back from work, Anna, and feel heavy?
Sometimes, yeah. As I said earlier, this week has been really hard, actually. I mean, it has been difficult. I think there's something, I guess, because it's what I do and what my team does every week. We can kind of detach ourselves in the sense that we are doing a job and we have a purpose. So I think this, again, this, you talking about a drop-off point or being able to do something, this is what we can do. We can help to explain it. We can help children to understand what's happening, and hopefully we can help them to manage their response to it as well. We always include advice within the magazine. If the news is making you feel anxious, here are some things you could do. And it might be, it could be talking to a trusted adult, it might be drawing a picture, it could be going out and doing some exercise just to sort of deal with that anxiety. And I think that's really important. And yes, sometimes I do come back feeling heavy, but I do also feel that at least I know that there is something I can do that will help.
We'll be right back after this short break.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Now, where were we? One of your children is turning 16 this week, so I wanted to sort of gauge how young people are responding to the situation over there, and you know what, you know, are they asking questions? Are they trying to help? I was listening to a radio, it was like a little junket on the, one of the news bulletins, and there was a young girl, 18-year-old Ukrainian, who was like, "I'm going back because I need to fight. I need to stand with my country." And I'm not sure at 18 if I had the bravery to, or if I'd been brave enough to kind of go back and do something like that. So I feel like there's been a good response from young people.
I think there's been a really good response from young people, and I think it is a mixed bag actually, because kids do deal with these things in different ways depending on their personality and their maturity as well. You know, my kids have both been asking questions. They both want to know what they can do to help. We've included, you know, within this week's issue, information about charities to donate to, how to write to your MP, for example, to demand that we, you know, that the country provides more support to refugees, or, you know, make a poster or something like that. But at the same time, kids are kids, aren't they? So my, you know, 1 minute my daughter might be asking about what's happening and acknowledging how awful it is, and she is 16, so she's, you know, she's quite a bit older than some of the children we're probably talking about here. But at the same time, she's also worried about her birthday party on Friday night, and I think that's good. I'm glad. I want her to be worried about her party, because that's something she can control. You know, she's the one who's worrying about what she's going to wear or what her hair's going to be like. And let the people who are paid to worry about this stuff worry about it. That was something a friend of mine said actually last week. Her daughter's 13 and was really anxious at the weekend about what she'd been hearing, and I thought her mum's response was brilliant. She said, you know, please, I don't want you to worry about this. It is, you know, it is very sad, and it is, you know, it is a little bit scary, but it's not your job to worry about it. There are lots of other people who are working to make this better. So I don't want you to worry about it, because that's not what you should be doing at your age.
Oh, do you know what? It's really nice to hear you say that, because I think there's a real, real fine line between teaching your children to be aware of other people's circumstances, to be empathetic towards others, to, you know, to have an understanding of what's going on, to be caring, to be kind, all of those things. But equally, you don't want them to take on the weight of the world at such a young age, especially, and it takes over their childhood. Because I think I don't want that. You know, I definitely don't want that for my children. I want them to know that others are not so fortunate, and that bad things can happen, of course. But equally, I want them to have fun. Yeah. I want them to have a carefree childhood as much as they possibly can. And sometimes it can feel almost selfish to think like that, but I guess we're taking it on so they don't have to, and we're like filtering it
we've got to.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
it's our job.
It's our job to do that. And I think but then yeah, you're right, they have to be carefree. You know, they have to be able to enjoy the world, and they've got to build resilience as well. You know, they've got to, if all they hear and see is bad news, we're not helping them to be able to deal with this stuff in the future as adults. There's something, you know, something we've talked about a lot on the team over the last couple of years, is how there's been a bit of a tendency, I think, in the media to suggest that, you know, saving the planet, because there's so much news about the climate crisis and everybody's worried about it. But there's a sense I've picked up on that people are saying, you know, oh, aren't the young people brilliant? The kids are going to save the world. They really care. They're going to do it. And I think that's actually, it's quite dangerous. Yeah. I think it's great that they care and they do want to do things, but I don't think we should hand them the responsibility for that. And I feel, you know, that we're sort of abdicating responsibility, whereas it's our job to do this stuff, and, you know, for them, for their future, and we shouldn't leave it to them anymore.
I completely agree with you, Anna. Yeah. Like, as long as we've got, I was going to say lead in our pencil, but I think that's used that as a difference. As long as we've still got fight left in our body, we should be doing it. Can't wait another 20 years until they've got to a point and then they feel that, and then they go, you know, it's not,
it's
like you said,
it's responsibility as well for them to take on, isn't it? We should like definitely be leading the way for them and showing them that we're doing something and not just leaving it up to them, like, oh, don't worry about it, it's your problem.
So you can do this. Thank you, great, we'll just sit back and let you save the world. And you know, look, they've just lived through a pandemic. They are worried about the climate, and now we are, you know, hearing about war, and the world is a big place, and we have a job to do to sort of show them that it's not all bad. You know, protect them where we can, tell them what we need to, certainly don't avoid those conversations, but always remind them that there's so much more,
so much good.
I've just seen, it's not a question, it's just a comment, and it's really sad. Someone's put, no question, but feeling massive guilt for bringing a kid into this world.
Oh no.
It's really sad.
That's really sad.
There's quite a lot of people just saying that they're just so terrified for what our children's futures look like.
Yeah, there's lots of people voicing those fears, aren't there? Someone's also saying, you know, thank you so much for doing the podcast, guys. This conversation is going to be so interesting. And I think, we were talking about earlier on, Anna, about always trying to have the answer to everything as parents. You know, we're still searching for that manual that should have been handed to us when our baby was a couple of minutes old.
Yeah.
It's not there, but it's really important to have these chats around it. And I think another one of the things that's come up is about trying to stay positive.
Yeah.
And I really liked your angle about saying, you know, make sure that you're highlighting to your children that there is so much good in the world as well. And do you find that you have to do that with your teenagers?
Yes and no. I think, you know, they're busy with school. You know, the 16-year-old, almost 16-year-old is going to be doing GCSEs this year. So actually my job at the moment is managing her anxiety about her exams, actually. Yeah. And trying to remind her that there's life on the other side of GCSEs. So yes is the short answer. Mm. It's, you know, we're always talking about things we can do, places we can go to, people that we're going to see, because it's very easy, isn't it? And you know what it's like. I mean, I can remember what it was like to be a teenager. You go sort of down a rabbit hole, don't you? And everything is very intense. Whatever your emotion is, it's very intense. So we've got a job to do to kind of just manage that, the extremes of the emotions at that age.
What sort of households did you guys grow up in? Were conversations had around the dining room table, you know, in the car on the way to school about sort of world events, about, you know, maybe political things that were going on, or what sort of conversations did you have growing up? Can you remember?
Do you know what? I don't think we did speak about things like that very much. So my dad was a lecturer, my mum was a teacher. I think at the time, news, you know, the news was at 9 or 10 o'clock at night, I think. So it was probably after my bedtime. We didn't have rolling news. I don't think we had conversations like that as a family, but I can remember, you know, I grew up in the 1970s, and you know, at that time there was a real fear of nuclear war. That was the worry, and I can remember that being discussed at school between us kids, but also I think at home as well, because there was a time when I think there were leaflets being put through the letterbox showing what you needed to do in the event of a nuclear war. So, you know, to go back to the lady who's feeling terrible for bringing a child into the world, I think most parents go through that emotion at some point after having a child, because I think that, you know, what you suddenly realise that the world is potentially quite a scary place. I don't know that it's any more scary now than it was 50 years ago or 100 years ago.
We're just seeing it more, aren't we? Because there's rolling news constantly. Yeah,
that's like you just said that. When as soon as you said, "Oh, the news used to be on at 9 or 10," and I think back, and I think, I never used to see the news. It wasn't on. I would have been in bed. And I guess there's positives and negatives to having this world that's so open now that we can see we can see pretty much any news channel, can't we, at any time? And we're not censored, and well, we probably are, but you know, to a certain level.
We'll just keep telling ourselves that we're not.
Yeah.
We're not censored.
But we can have access to lots of information now, which we wouldn't have had growing up. And so for us, we're just navigating what to do with this information and trying to arm our children with the tools to do the same, because we didn't see it, and we're only just seeing it as adults. It's a lot to take on, and like we say, with so much of parenting, there's no manual. And you know, we've got young children, and we feel like we've just nailed the sleeping and the eating and the behavior in some ways, and now it's this, you know, something else. It's like bigger problems.
When you say we've nailed the eating, Georgia, I mean, have you met my son, Kit?
Well,
they eat. This is from Ellie. Anna, how to talk to my child about the climate crisis when I'm terrified about what their future might look like. There was quite a few questions around what we were discussing.
Again, I mean, that's another subject that we've written about extensively in the week junior. I mean, I think, again, it's a case of, you know, knowing, arming them with the facts. So understanding that the world is warming, and what the impact of that is and might be in the future if we don't do something about it. I think, again, really the way to go with that conversation is to focus on what people are doing already. to make a difference. So the climate crisis is real. We tend to avoid words like crisis, actually, right, as a rule, because, I mean, anything that is, there are arguments both ways on this. I know a lot of, the Guardian and other sort of adult media have opted to use the word crisis precisely because it conveys the urgency of the situation. We are a bit more careful in a children's magazine, and you might want to think about that when talking to kids. But yes, once they understand what the climate crisis is, the focus is, you know, who's doing what to help, what are countries doing, what needs to change to slow this down and stop it happening. And, you know, there are so many examples of people who are already doing amazing work on that front, whether it is, you know, countries who, you know, I think everybody feels that things should be happening faster than they are, but at least there are efforts being made to reduce emissions. At least there are efforts being made to have more sources of renewable energy. And then on a local level, thinking about, you know, again, without abdicating responsibility and putting it onto kids, but what can we do as a family to do our bit? You know, whether that is, you know, most people recycle now, but, you know, could we be going out and picking up litter in the streets so there's not plastic all over the place? Could we walk to school rather than go in the car? You know, that's not always practical for everybody, but to sort of within what's possible for you and your family to sort of think about what difference you can make, and to understand that if everybody does something small, that does actually add up to quite a lot. And it's just, I think it's kind of empowering to know that you can do something.
Yeah. I was going to say, I feel like children definitely have a really good understanding of little things that they can do. Like Axel's always on at me about recycling, which is great. But he also came home the other day and they'd been learning about palm oil and various different things. And he gets very upset if he sees anyone chopping trees down. And then I have to obviously explain to him that, you know, sometimes that has to be done and they'll be planting others. And he's like, oh, phew. it's great. And I guess you forget to tell them those things because we're just sort of recycling and we're doing various bits and bobs. But now I do make an effort to tell him why I'm doing these things because I feel like he's five and now he kind of can grasp those small changes that we can make.
It's lovely, isn't it? It's lovely when they get it. It's like we've got to have a tree chopped down in the garden because during the storms it lost a limb. And Kit's obviously overheard the conversation going on between my husband and the tree surgeon, and I could hear him speaking to his mate at school at drop off. He's only four, and he was like, "The tree in my garden's lost his arm, and he's got to come down now." And I was like, "It's really, you know, lost a limb, and he's gone. Oh, it's his arm. Is his big arm's fallen off?" They do understand it. They are like little sponges, aren't they? Lovely little things. Right, I think we should should we do one more?
I think a lot of people are just saying, "How do I not feel overwhelmed?" And how do we not put those feelings onto our children and not take the weight?
I think that's the advice that we would give to children, I would probably say, is perfectly right for us adults as well. It's kind of, you know, we've got to, you know, we shouldn't be doom scrolling, we should turn the news off if it's starting to make us feel anxious. It's not that you don't want to know, it's just that there's only so much you can know. I think, you know, we too need to look after ourselves. We need to get out, do some exercise, watch something stupid on TV, read a book, bake a cake, whatever we all need to do to take our minds off it, to do something mindless or completely distracting. I think it's so important that we don't allow ourselves to become completely overwhelmed by the news, and then, you know, our strength will transfer to our children if we can keep ourselves calm as best we can in whatever, you know, whatever that takes. And I, you know, go for a run, you know, whatever it is, then we're going to be better parents and better able. Sometimes you have to put yourself first as well. You know, that's you know, the old, when you're on a plane, you put your oxygen mask on first so that you can look after your child. So I think that kind of applies in this situation as well.
Really lovely advice, Anna. Thank you so much. And do you know what? After today's chat, I'm going to sign Isla up for the week, Junior. I've got an eight-year-old, my stepdaughter Isla, and she's fascinated by the world and everything that's going on. In fact, the other day she was talking to Luna, her middle sister, going, "Donald Trump is a poop stink face, right? And he has gone to jail." And I was like, "Okay, no, we need to sort of work on that slightly, but he is a poop stink face."
I remember Isla talking about Donald Trump when Axel and Luna were like 3 months old.
Yeah, she's obsessed with him.
And I remember being like, oh my gosh, how does she even, how old, she must have been three? Was she three?
I must have been banging on about him for ages.
So young, yeah.
She'll be writing for you, Anna, in no time.
Exactly, you need a new writer.
We're welcome now. We're looking for writers at the moment, actually, so send her my way.
I will. Anna Bassi, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been an absolute treat.
Thank you.
Thanks, Anna.
Oh, she's amazing, isn't she?
Yeah, she really is. And do you know what? It's just so, it's reassuring to have somebody like that on the podcast when, you know, we have conversations, not really knowing the right way to go. We don't want to, you know, completely hide our children from all of this stuff. But equally, like I was saying, we want them to have a carefree childhood and to feel happy when they can.
Do you know what? I was thinking back to my childhood and I was thinking, When Anna was talking about the fact that we've now got rolling news, you know, when I was growing up, there was, you know, the 9 o'clock news or the 10 o'clock news or whatever. And I'd probably see it in my sort of early teenage years and then go to bed. And I was in this complete bubble. I was living down in Kent, you know, lovely, idyllic childhood. I was so lucky. There was nothing really that impacted my whole life at all up until that point. And then my cousin died. And it happened so quickly, and you're probably thinking, where's she going with this? But I hadn't even had a conversation around grief with my family.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen anybody on the news, I hadn't watched any programs on it, and it was it impacted my childhood, my teenage years. I was 14 when he died. It was the worst thing in the world. And I feel, as a result of that, I've then looked at my kids and thought, I don't want them to get to a point where something like grief or something like war or whatever, they don't have a clue how to handle that.
Yeah.
So I'm always more inclined to have those discussions with them. But then Dozer sometimes says to me, like, come on, she's only five. What are you, like, don't go down a rabbit hole with her. It's so really, really hard to navigate how much information you give them and how much you retain.
Get the balance. Yeah, and unless they're asking you questions, do you open up the conversation or do you not? I guess it's case by case, isn't it? Like, I know Axel's super sensitive, so I know that I probably have to err on, like, the sort of side of caution with him and only give him, like, little snippets here and there. Whereas I don't know what Gigi will be like, you know. She might be a bit more, you know, able to handle those sorts of, I don't know. It's so difficult.
Yeah, it's
but
really difficult.
I do hopefully. Definitely feel like I know a little bit more about what to do now. So thank you so much.
And me. Yeah, massive thank you to Anna. And thank you to you guys as well for sending in all of your questions. You are not alone. We're all going through it. We're all feeling exactly the same things from the questions that were sent in. That those were absolutely questions that Georgia and I had going around in our heads as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, hopefully we've kind of normalised that. And again, like, if we didn't get to your question, please drop us a message, drop us a DM. Also, we absolutely love, there are various organisations, in fact, so many people are putting together to send donations out to the Polish border, you know, to help with the crisis in some way. These are the ones that we're loving, George. Chooselove.org and warchild.org.uk are doing fantastic things.
Yeah, also there's a charity called Teams for You, which is based in Wales. You can send, you can do donations or you can make shoeboxes. Also, Nanny Luana, she's on Instagram. She is doing so much. So just head over to her Instagram page. But also, you'll know locally, if you go on your local Facebook group, there'll be coffee shops, there'll be, you know, local donation points, and they'll tell you the sort of things that they need and they're looking for. You know, it's things like nappies, also you know, like allergy milks, non-dairy milks, like all of that kind of stuff would be really useful. So, you know, if you can do something to help, then please do, and check out you know, what's going on in your local area.
Yeah, absolutely. And as always, we would love you to rate, review, subscribe, and please give the podcast a little follow if you've got time. And we love reading your reviews as well. If you do have a second, that would be absolutely wonderful, because of course it does help to spread the Made by Mamas podcast word, and that's what we want.
Absolutely. And if you've got any topics that you'd like us to cover on this Friday podcast, then this episode is for you guys, and it's for us to find the right expert to answer your questions. So please just drop any suggestions into our DMs. We're on at Made by Mamas on Instagram, and we'll be back on Tuesday.
Made by Mamas is an Insanity podcast production, and today's episode was produced by the lovely Charlotte Mason.
Insanity Group.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.